Morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama is Tess. Thanks to Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lona Zech Nishmas Liba Gavriela Bashmuel. We find ourselves on Chesamud Beis at the two dots towards the top of the Amud. A little real estate talk for today, and it'll take up a good portion of our day, at least in the beginning of this morning. Let's review some of the most basic halachas. First of all, in terms of mortgages are ways of securing loans. The mortgage basically serves as a guarantor. So when somebody borrows money, so either he's going to pay back or his property is going to pay back. It's going to be one or the other. If he defaults in the event that he defaults on a loan, so the property is going to be paying back. Okay, the most basics loan recovery. So that property serves as a guarantor in that, and so therefore, what the Baal Chov is considered to have is what's called a shibud in the chasm. He has a lien on the property. Okay, I know anyone who's lived in this world and is an adult and kind of knows these things already, but just some basic halachas that we're familiar with. So once the Baal Chov has a shibud in the chasm, so that shibud is going to follow the property wherever that property goes. So if that property sold up to somebody else, it does not matter. The Baal Chov, the creditor, can still go ahead and collect from that property, wherever that property may be. Another basic halacha that we need to know, we saw this already, we've been discussing this last couple of days, just some of the most basic halachas, is that the Baal Chov collects from Beinonis. He collects from the B properties. In other words, good properties are graded A, B, and C. Already a discussion we had in yesterday's daf, whether or not these gradings are done on a curve, or whether the grading had some sort of objective level to them, but either way, let's just speak in the abstract. It's just easier to do that. So these properties are graded on a curve. The properties are graded A, B, and C, and the Baal Chov only collects from the B properties. He does not collect from the A, and he does not collect from the C. Maker Adin, what we discussed a couple days ago, is that really the Baal Chov should be able to collect from the C properties, but that's Meikar Adin. That's according to the strict letter of the law. However, the Chachamim wanted to incentivize people lending money, and so they did that by awarding the Baal Chov, by awarding the creditor to be able to collect from the B. So B is really an enactment made by the Chachamim in order to incentivize lending. Okay, another basic halacha that we need to go over is the following. We know that in terms of the borrower, so the borrower is going to pay back the loan, and even though if he has properties, if he sold off any of the properties, the creditor cannot collect from any of the sold properties if the borrower has properties on his possession. So that is the basic halacha of, you cannot collect after nechasim mishubadim, any lien properties, any properties that were sold off, in the event that the borrower has b'nei chorin, has any properties on hand. So that means then, that anybody, any buyer of properties, as long as there was some residual property still left in the hands of the borrower, so that person is going to be protected. That person will not be able, will not be collected against the defaulted loan, because there were other properties left on him. And even if those later properties were subsequently sold, the first buyer, the second buyer, whoever is not the last buyer of the last property, they're all going to be protected by this enactment made by the Chachamim, considering the fact that there were still B'nai Chorim left. So in terms of seizing of properties in the defaulted loan, the creditor can only come after the last property that was sold. And obviously, if that property is not going to satisfy the note, the one before that. But in other words, but basically, the first buyer, second buyer, all the original buyers of the properties, as long as there was residual properties left over, so they're going to be protected, they're going to be free and clear. What we also discussed at the end of yesterday's daf is that sometimes a buyer does not want afforded this protection. Why? So let's discuss what we discussed in yesterday's daf. Let's talk about the event where there's one buyer who bought all the properties. So let's say that this guy, the seller of the property, who also is a borrower and also has got liens against the property. So let's say the seller sold off the properties to one individual. So first he sold off the Zibaris, then he sold off the Beninus, and then and only then did he sell off the Itis. So now, under that circumstance, so the borrower would theoretically, let me say that sentence again, the creditor would come and collect from the Itis, from the best property, because the best property was the last property that was held by the borrower. However, in this particular scenario, all properties ended up being bought by one individual. So that one individual now, as we discussed in yesterday's daf, takes the role of takes the role of the seller. And so that means now basically as he's looking at the creditor and the creditor's coming after him, so there are liens against the properties that the buyer has. So the buyer now says to the creditor, look, I know you're going to come and I know you're going to collect. And I know that the iddis, the eight properties, were the last ones that were held. But and so really I understand that you're going to be coming after the best property. But you know what? That's only because of a special enactment that was made by the Chachamim. I decline. I do not want you coming after the Iddis, because truth of the matter is, I have all three properties. I have the Iddis, I have the Banners, I have the Ziboris. So as far as I'm concerned, don't collect from the Iddis. Yes, I understand that the rabbinic enactment was there to protect. Here, it's not going to serve me, it's not going to protect me. I'd much rather you take from the Banners than do not take from the Iddis. And so, as we learned in yesterday's daf, a person can decline the special enactment that was made. Okay, that was all just basic summary, basic ideas, klalios, just the basic information, so we could A, review yesterday's daf, and B, we can continue with what we are in the Gemara. Where are we in the Gemara? We find ourselves two dots on Chesamad Beis, Pshita. The Gemara says, let's start off with something which is obvious. As you'll see in just a moment, when we say obvious, by the way, obvious after knowing all this information, meaning it's not that straightforward, but once you put all the information together, then you'll understand it is pashut. It is pretty simple, straightforward. Let's say we have the following scenario. Again, the starting point of this is that I had a person who had A, B, and C property. He sold the A, B, and C property to a buyer. Okay, and there were liens against those properties. Okay, in other words, the original seller also was a borrower, and so therefore there were liens against those properties. Now, as we discussed just a moment ago, we have a scenario in which the buyer can say to the creditor, I know you. The last thing I bought was Iddis, but I'm telling you right now, you're not going to be collecting Iddis from me because I decline the rabbinic institution. I want you to collect from Beinonis, even though I understand your argument of why you don't want to collect from Iddis, but I'd rather you collect from Beinonis. Fine. Now, the story continues where Mach Lokeach Beinonis Viziboris. What the Lokeach did is that after having bought all three properties, A, B, and C, Iddis, Beinonis, and Ziboris, he went ahead and he sold the Beinonis and the Ziboris. Vishari Iddis Lafanav. And what's left with him now is only the Iddis property, the A property. Lesu Kulu Veligbu Me'iddis. So here comes now the creditor. And the creditor comes to the first buyer and says to the first buyer, look, I'm going to collect now my loan and I'm collecting from the Iddis. Why? Daha achronahi, because as far as the original borrower, meaning the person you bought these properties from, so that was the last one that was left by him. And now, the only thing you could have done to turn me away from the Iddis and move me towards the Beinonis and Ziboris is only because you said, I have all three, therefore I want you to collect from the Beinonis. But here in this particular scenario, he sold off the Beinonis and Ziboris. So the only thing he has left is Iddis. Beinonis and Ziboris less no gabe. You don't have the Beinonis, you don't have the Ziboris. The matzil amemelahu gabe mi Beinonis v'Ziboris alo nichali betekantas rabbanon. If you had all three, I can certainly understand how you'd say to me, look, don't take from the Iddis, take from the Beinonis and Ziboris, and I'm declining the rabbinic institution. Here in this particular scenario, because the first buyer sold off the Beinonis and Ziboris, he therefore doesn't have it. He therefore does not have the right to decline the rabbinic institution. Okay. So the Gemara says, that's obvious. Okay. I understand how obvious are we talking about. In order just to get to this case, obviously you need to follow the whole storyline. But once you follow the whole storyline, it is obvious. But let's discuss now the following. Let's say, again, the starting point of the story is the same. We have a buyer who buys all three properties, Iddis, Beinonis, Ziboris. The last property that he bought was Iddis. Okay, so that was the last property that was Ben Chorin. So according to the rabbinic institution, the creditor should be able to collect from the Iddis. Now what he did is the buyer, turned around and he sold the property, and he sold specifically the Iddis. He sold the A property. Avamachr Iddis v'shar Beinonis v'Ziboris, mine. Now, in this event where he sold off the Yidus and now he has Benes and Ziboris, so under this circumstance, now, who does the creditor go after? Does the creditor go after the first buyer? Does the creditor go after the second buyer? Now here, we can construct an argument in two directions. So the Gemara says, so let's start off with our first argument. Sefer Abai Lamemar, Asukula Gaba Me'idis. So Abai is of the opinion that now, at this point in time, the creditor can go after the Idis, can go after the best property. Consider. This is Abai's thought process. Consider that the Idis was really the Ben Chorin, meaning that was the last property actually held by the actual borrower. So truth be told is that the creditor at that point in time had every right to collect from the Idis. Now, when the Idis was sold off to the first buyer, so the first buyer said, look, the only reason why you're going to be collecting from Idis right now is because of a special rabbinic institution that you cannot collect from a Shubanim in the case where there are Bnei Chorin. But I have all three. So I'm telling you right now, I don't want the rabbinic institution. Don't collect from the Idis, collect from the Beinonis. I have the Beinonis. So collect from the Beinonis. Fine. But now, he sold off the Idis. So now, the first buyer is going to say to the creditor, look, remember, that Idis was the last Ben Chorin that was held by the borrower. I'm going to tell you right now, you'll go after the Idis. I sold it off, and you'll go after the Idis, you'll go after the A property. So this is Abai's argument. So Amale Rava, so Rava says, I reject that argument, and I'm going to go in a different direction. Ma machar rishon l'sheni kos chusha tavel yado. So this is a very interesting concept, and that is that when you buy a property, not only are you buying the actual property itself, you're buying rights as well. Whatever rights the owner had to that property, meaning the property plus the rights, that's being sold off to the buyer. It's kind of like, the analogy is not great, but it's kind of like when you're buying a house with some sort of membership, right? Some sort of association, you have to pay for the fees, but in other words, you get all the rights that come included in the house. Here, what the second buyer is going to be saying to the first buyer is, look, when you bought the Idis, you had certain rights. And one of those rights that you had is you had the right to turn the creditor away from the Idis and go after the Beinus and Ziboris. When I bought, the second buyer now saying to the first buyer, when I bought that property from you, I also purchased those very same rights. Now, it's an interesting argument because if you really think about it, the second buyer doesn't have the Beinonis, second buyer doesn't have the Ziboris, so it's a right that was entitled to the first buyer for reasons which we understand because the first buyer had all three properties. Okay. But still, what Rav is arguing is that since the first buyer had those rights in the property, he sold those, not only property, but sold property and rights to the second buyer. And this is Rav's argument. Ma macharishon, I'm just rereading. Ma macharishon l'sheni, kol tzchusha tav liyado, v'kem v'dilu asuga b'lokech rishon, ma ta'ag v'lei mibenes v'zibaris. Since if the creditor had gone to the first buyer could have turned him away from the A and moved the creditor towards the B and the C property. Again, the Gemara is just simply reviewing what we said yesterday. What the first buyer is saying to the creditor is, the only reason why you think you have the right to the Idis is because of this institution of the Chachamim, I'm declining that institution. And to which now, the second buyer says, I purchased not only the property, but those rights as well. And therefore, I'm able to also turn you away from the Idis, and you're going to go collect from the Beinus and Ziboris by the first buyer. Okay. Amar Rava. Another halacha. Reuven shemachu kol sedaso l'Shimon. Reuven sells all of his properties to Shimon, so now, as we already discussed, Reuven, of course, in the story is going to be a borrower, and he's going to default on his loan, and there was a lien against the properties, and now the credit is going to go after the properties, and all properties were sold to Shimon. So let's imagine now in the sale, there was A, B, and C. All three grades of property. And he sold all of them to Shimon. And now Shimon turns around and he sells one of the properties to Levi. And just to understand what's going on over here, let's say that he sold the B properties off to Levi. Uva Balchov, the Reuven, and in comes the creditor. And the creditor of Reuven now is coming, and really, truth of the matter is that he's got two candidates in terms of who he can collect from. He can collect from Shimon, or he can collect from Levi. So, Uva Balchov, the Reuven, Ratza Mizegover, Ratza Mizegover. So, he can now choose. He can either collect from Shimon or he can collect from Levi. He's got a lien. The lien allows him to collect. And Shimon sold Levi Beinonis property. The Beinonis property is the property that is collectible against outstanding loans. And so therefore, truth be told, is that the Baal Chov has a choice. And the Gemara is now exceedingly clear. The Gemara says, but let's say that what Shimon sells Levi is not the B property, but he sells either the A or the C. So now Levi says to the creditor, don't you dare. Don't you dare come after me. Because I specifically purchased the A and C property in order so that you would only collect your lien against the B properties, which was still in the hands of the first buyer. Damrelay, and the Gemara spells this out, Lahachi daiki v'zavni idas v'ziboris. I went out of my way. I specifically, consciously purchased A and C properties so that you would only be able to collect from the B properties that are still in the hands of Shimon. Ara delo chazulach v'afilo zavan beinun esnami lo amaran. And the Gemara says, and even in a scenario where Levi, that's the second purchaser, the second buyer, even if Levi bought Beinon's property, there's still going to be a circumstance in which he can tell the creditor, don't you dare come after me, go only after the first buyer. Ella de lo shari Beinon's de kavasei, de la matzi armale hinach l'achmakum l'gabe Shimon. Aval shari Beinon's de kavasei gabi Shimon, lo gabi mine de matzi armale hinach l'achmakum l'gabas mimenu. However, if in the event where, let's say, Levi, that's the second buyer, purchases Beinon's property, but doesn't buy all the Beinon's property. He doesn't buy up all the B. So now he'll say to the creditor once again, I knew there was an outstanding loan. I knew that there was a lien against the properties. And that's why I went out of my way to buy not all the B properties, some of the B properties. And I made sure to leave over in the hands of the first buyer enough B property so that in the event of default and in the event that you're now going to collect against that defaulted loan, I made sure that there would be enough property in Shimon so that you'd not be coming after me. Amar Abaye. More halachas. The Gemara obviously is well into a tangent, meaning this is, we're learning Baba Kama, we're learning Zikin. These halachas over here are really more in line with, let's say, Baba Basra. But as long as the Gemara has took us on this slight tangent, the Gemara is going to stay a little bit longer.
How does one have the right to sell a property with a lien on it?
How can he sell a property?
He's got a lien on it.
Okay, good. So that's it's just a lien.
The lien goes moves on.
Right. So what do you mean? So he sells it. If sometimes
you declare.
Everyone got excited. I like it. Another. What do you mean? How does he have the right to do it? You can sell it. In other words, now the buyer, from the buyer's perspective, sometimes he could buy it with recourse. Sometimes he could buy without recourse. We're going to be discussing that as well in just a moment. Now, if he buys it with recourse, in other words, so what's going to happen is that the property will be taken away from him, and he'll go to the seller and say to the seller, okay, but you took personal responsibility in the event of a seizure. Sometimes he could buy it and with no recourse. Now, if he buys it with no recourse, I would imagine that the price would be reduced as a result of the fact that he's taking that kind of risk. Okay?
Is there some type of system for title or lien search?
The general assumption the Gemara makes throughout this entire discussion is that if there was a sale, that sale obviously required a contract. Contract is sold by two witnesses. Once you have a contract and two witnesses, the Gemara describes it as a kol. Okay, in other words, that point in time makes it a public sale. So
he has to disclose that he has a lien.
It is the buyer's responsibility to make that discovery, but that discovery is going to be easier to discover, considering the fact that there was a document with witnesses. So, but it is the buyer's responsibility to make that to learn that information. Okay. Amar Abaye.
Well, that's what I was asking, though. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there some kind of recording system of liens that...
Right. No, no. It's not... The system, I don't think, is going to be as sophisticated as what we have like nowadays. But yes. But in other words, I think the simplest answer is no. It didn't go in any particular record.
Go around and ask everybody, did you lend this guy any money?
But again, though, in other words, the only things that create a lien against property are documented loans. Verbal loans create no lien on a property. Okay. Amar Abaye Reuven Shemachar Sada LeShimon BaAchrayos. So now Reuven sells the land to Shimon and recourse, meaning that when he sells the land to Shimon, he tells Shimon, look, in the event that there is a seizure of the land from one of my creditors, so you can come after me, and I will personally reimburse you for the land. Okay, the asabach of the Reuven v'taref b'Shimon, and as predictable as this could be, so now you have the creditors of Reuven coming after Shimon's property, and dina hu de azal Reuven mishtai dina b'hadei. So now Reuven can get involved. Now, generally speaking, whenever we talk about litigation can only take place by the litigants. I know that doesn't sound smart, but if you think about it, it's very smart. Meaning that litigation can only be done by the litigants, meaning that you have to be a baal din in order to show up in court. You have to be part and parcel of the case. You can't just simply be a nice neighbor coming along and saying, hi, let me get involved. You have no business being in this case. Therefore, you'll spectate from the side, or you'll step outside the court. But in other words, you have no right to be part of litigation if you're not a litigant. What the Gemara is teaching us over here is that Reuven is considered a litigant, even though the creditor is coming after Shimon. Now, as far as the creditor is concerned, he only wants the property. Where's the property right now? In Shimon's hands. You could have made an argument that really there are only two litigants to talk about in this case. The creditor and Shimon, the buyer. What the Gemara is teaching us is that Reuven can consider himself to be a litigant as well. Why? Where the creditor can't say to Reuven, get out of here. You're not involved in this case anymore. The land is no longer by you. And for obvious reason, which the Gemara is going to articulate. The Amarle, because now Reuven's turning to the creditor, and Reuven says to his lender, Im afkes mine alai hadar. What do you mean? I'm not a participant of the case. You know, I sold the land with recourse, which means now that once you take the land away from Shimon, Shimon's coming after me. I therefore now, right now, can consider myself to be one of the litigants in the case. Now the Gemara here goes one step further. This is the second version. And in the second version, even if Reuven sold the land with no recourse, and so therefore Shimon, if the land was taken away from Shimon, Shimon simply has no recourse. Shimon can't go after Reuven. Even under those circumstances, Reuven can still come into the courtroom and Reuven can still litigate on behalf of Shimon. Why? Because Reuven can say, look, I know that financially I'm not going to take a hit if the land is taken away from Shimon, but in terms of my reputation is going to take a serious hit. Because now Shimon's going to come after me and Shimon's going to say, look, I know I bought the land with no recourse. I get it. But at the same time, I thought you were going to pay back your loan. I didn't think we would get to this point in time. And now, you defaulted on your loan, now he's coming after me, and I understand, I opened myself, I exposed myself, but I didn't think we were going to get here, and now Shimon's going to say to Reuven, now I'm upset with you. And I'd imagine that the next Kiddush, so Shimon's going to share this information with others, although of course he shouldn't, Lashon Hara, but basically Reuven as a function of him wanting to protect his reputation, can now also, according to the second version, declare himself to be a litigant in this case as well. Separate discussion, meaning fair question, but the Amar Abaye. Reuven Shemachar Sada LeShimon Shel BaAchrayos. Okay. Reuven sells a land to Shimon with no recourse, no responsibility. The Yatzo Alei HaSikin. And in comes people who challenge the authenticity of the property. Meaning, these challengers are saying, Reuven never owned the land. And so what was Reuven selling? Nothing. The one more halacha that we're going to do today regarding properties. So, Shimon at this point in time is thinking to himself, oh no, this is messy. Meaning, I know that we agreed to buy the land, and I don't know if I'm right what I'm about to say, and so I probably shouldn't say it, but let's even say that Reuven put a down payment on the land. Now, I may not be right about that point. It may be that there was no money exchange, but there was an agreement, there was some handshake, something that was done that ratified that there was some sort of sale that was done. But now Shimon realizes this is going to get messy, because now there are people challenging whether or not Reuven actually owned the land to begin with. And you know what Shimon is thinking to himself, which we all would be thinking to ourselves, I'd like to walk away from this entire deal. So, so the Gemara says, and this is all in the name of Abaye. So if as long as he didn't do a chazaka, a proprietary act to the property itself, so then at that point in time, yachol achzerbo. So he can walk away from this deal. The Mishi, just give me a second. However, once the chazaka was done, so then he can no longer walk from the deal, and he's going to have to basically get stuck in the mud. I guess over here you'd say that almost literally. Now, Ben, this is why earlier I was doubting myself, meaning I don't know if there was another kinyan that was done in addition to the chazaka. Right, this is what's bothering you. Yeah. Meaning, if the chazaka is the ma'aseh kinyan, so then I don't understand. Before, of course, you can walk away, and afterwards, you can't walk away. I'm venturing a guess, and this is again where I'm speculating. I'm not saying I know this, but I'm venturing a guess that a kinyan was done, and still, you can walk away from the deal if you see that this is going to be a complicated affair.
But if the kinyan was done, what's the purpose of another chazaka?
So because the other chazaka is there to show, not only, it's not there to ratify the sale, it's there to even further reflect the ownership of the property. Okay, anyway.
But that's a standard chazaka.
I know.
You buy a land, you walk around, you move something, that's chazaka, there's kinyan right
there. I'm going to be more on your side on this issue than I'm just trying to, defend the Gemara, I'm trying to understand the Gemara also better, but I'm kind of with you on this. So my time at Amalei, chaisa dekatri yisavra v'kibalt. However, once, I'm sorry, did I read it? I don't know if I read inside. But once he does a ma'isa chazaka, once he does a proprietary act of the property, so at that point in time, he can't back out. And now he's stuck. And maybe the sale is a good sale. Maybe the sale is not a good sale. Maybe Reuven owned the land. Maybe Reuven didn't own the land. We're going to go to court and we're going to litigate. And all this is good. But right now, for the here and now, congratulations. You just got a land that may not belong to you. Now, my time, Adam Alei Chaisa Dekatre, Savra VeKabalt. Because Reuven now says to Shimon, look, literally, it's a bag of knots. Right, Rashi says that it was basically, it's a sack filled with air, tied up with knots, meaning, what did you get? You may have gotten nothing. But, right, correct. But in other words, you exposed yourself. You bought the land with no guarantee whatsoever. And so therefore, you realized that there was risk going into the buying of this land. You probably thought the risk was maybe a creditor would come and take the land. Now there's even more risk. Now somebody, say, right, somebody's contesting, I didn't even own the land to begin with. Okay, so you dealt with a shady character. So this is what you get. And it's congratulations. So, just give me a second. Me'ematz have a chazaka. From what point in time is it going to be a chazaka? Mechidaisha mitzrei. The Gemara says from the time where he starts outlining the borders of the property. Simple act of proprietary. V'davka shalom b'achrayas. But this is only when the land was sold with no recourse. Aval b'achrayas lo. So, but if the land was sold with recourse, so at that point in time now, the buyer can say to the seller, you know, you sold the land to me with personal responsibility. And now, it's contested whether or not the land even belongs to you. Well, you know what? I'm going to walk away from this deal. Because I didn't think that we would be here at this point in time, now challenging whether, people are challenging whether or not you own the land to begin with. Here we go. You get the land back. I'll get my money back. Bye. Igadami, the Gemara now has a second version. Afilu be'achrayas nami. So the, and the Gemara's second version goes like this. Even if the land was sold with recourse. Once a kinyan chazaka was done, once a maisa chazaka was done to the land, so Shimon now owns the land. Now, it's true, Shimon may own nothing, because we don't know if Reuven's owned the land or not. But until that issue is resolved, Shimon's going to be the owner of the land, and even with Achraios, and even with recourse, Shimon's going to own the land. And so what about the recourse? The Gemara says very simply, Reuven says to Shimon, I know I sold you the land with recourse, and I know the land may be taken away from you. If in the event the land is taken from you, we'll just go through the process. You'll go to Beis Din. Beis Din will write you what's called a shtar tirfa. A shtar toref is basically a document authorizing you to be able to collect from me. It's a court order that I am going to have to pay you. When we get to that bridge, we're going to cross it. So if the land is taken away from you, so then you will exercise your recourse. Until that point in time, congratulations, the land belongs to you. Okay. Okay, Adkan. That's the Gemara went off on a bit of a tangent. The reason why is sometimes the Gemara does that. but we got into a discussion in the Gemara of how lands are appraised, whether they're objectively appraised, whether they're subjectively appraised, and then once we got into the appraisal of land, and once we know that the Baal Chov only collects from B properties, so the Gemara just went off on a tangent regarding some halachas regarding creditors, selling land, collection of the creditors, recourse of the buyer, etc., etc. Back to the discussion at hand. Rav Huna Amar Okesef Omeitav. Rashi points out over here, Rav Huna is going all the way back to yesterday's daf, and that is the following. We were struggling over the course of yesterday's daf, trying to resolve the question of, when I damage somebody, how do I pay back? The Torah is ambiguous. The Torah in one place says that I have to pay back with property. Meitav Sadeh or Meitav Karma Yushalayim. On the other hand, the Torah also says, Yashiv, you just simply need to make restitution. And as we learned in yesterday's daf, even a filu subani couldn't be even a commodity, not even an exciting commodity. But you can pay back with movables. Which one is it? Is it property? Is it movables? The Gemara yesterday, it was actually 2 days ago and yesterday, came up with four different approaches in terms of how to resolve it. So the Gemara now, Rav Huna, is giving us another way to resolve this issue, and this is what Rav Huna is addressing. The discrepancy between how do I pay back Nezik? Is it with property, or is it with commodity? So Rav Huna Amar O Kesef O Meitav. So Rav Huna gives an interesting answer. It's either going to be property, it's going to be money. Property or money? Cash. Legal tender. So Eisvei Rav Nachman la Rav Huna Yashu la Rabba Shava Kesef Afilu Subin. So the Gemara says, well, what if Rav Huna, remember what we said yesterday? Rav Nachman said that if you do damages, you can pay back, and you don't even have to pay back in money. You can pay back in Shava Kesef, as long as it's a commodity with value, so that's going to be a satisfactory reimbursement of the damages that you've done. So how does your answer work exactly? You say land or money, and meanwhile, we learned yesterday, afilu subin. So the Gemara says, well, that halacha of Rav Nachman is only talking about a situation where the damager has neither. He doesn't have property, he doesn't have cash. So therefore, in that event, so he'll give him whatever he has. Whatever assets he has, whatever commodities he has, that's what he's going to give to reimburse for the damage. So the Gemara says, now isn't it obvious? And the Gemara says, no, it's not so obvious. Zil Tarach Zabin Kesef. You made an easy argument, and that is the halacha demands either you pay back damages with either property or with cash. You don't have either? Fine. You'll sell your commodity, you'll come up with the cash, and you will then give me cash. But maybe a cash equivalent is not good. That would have been the Havamina. It's actually a pretty good Havamina. Kamashman, that's the Chiddush. Amravasi. Okay, Adkan. All right, and that really is the conclusion, that's the closure of the Gemara's discussion regarding when you damage and you're paying back for the damages. Do I pay back with land? Do I pay back with commodity? Do I pay back with assets? So the Gemara brings down, if the grand total number of suggestions in terms of how to resolve that is five, 4 in yesterday's daf, really 2 days ago and yesterday's daf, a fifth one today. In terms of the halacha, if you want to see a discussion on the halacha, so you could see the third Tosfos on the Samud. Third Tosfos on the Samud has a discussion of who the halacha follows like. He quotes the Rif, right? We don't. Sometimes Tosfos quotes the Rif, sometimes he doesn't. Meaning, Tosfos certainly had the Rif. The Rif predated Tosfos by at least 100 years, probably more. Anyway, see there for a discussion in terms of what the final halacha is. See the Shulchan Aruch. Anyway, Amar Ravasi, Ksafim Harein Kekarka. Ravasi makes a statement which we're going to be spending a good part of our day now trying to uncover, and that is, money is like property. Now, that's not always true, and in halacha, property and money have two different sets of laws, and so he's making an equivalency, and of course the question is, to what end is he making that equivalency? Lama Hilchasa, what does that have to do with? Ilem Elinyan Meitav Hainu de Rav Huna. Now, does it have to do with the halacha of Meitav? So that's exactly what Rav Huna taught us. Rav Huna says that when you damage, you're going to either pay property or money. And if all Ravasi is doing is teaching us what Rav Huna said, why didn't Ravasi say, I agree with Rav Huna? So the Gemara is going to try to come up with other halachas where money and land are equivalent. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the following scenario, L'shnei achim shechalku, v'natal echa karka v'echa ksafim. Let's say you have two brothers dividing the estate of their father. Leave Bechor out of the discussion. We're going to keep it nice and simple. So each one gets 50% of dad's estate. And let's say in terms of the division of the estate, so the brothers agreed, you know what, you'll take the property, I'll take the cash. And it comes down nice and neat, 50-50. Okay, good. Now along comes the creditor. Now remember, the creditor has a lien on the property. And therefore, wherever the property goes, that lien follows. So now along comes the creditor, and the creditor now is going to come and seize the property from one of the brothers. Obviously the brother that has the property. So now the brother that just lost all of his property is going to turn to his other brother and say, hi. Good morning, how are you? It's great to see you. Do me a favor. That property was just taken away. Some creditor took it away from me. So you know that cash that you got, you just give half of it to me. Right? You understand, right? So under these circumstances, the one brother who just got all the land taken away will go to the other brother and say, okay, give me half the money. Mm-hmm. To which the Gemara says, Pshita, hi brava, hi labra. So the Gemara says, well, that's obvious, isn't it? Now, it's funny, I know what's coming up in the Gemara next. So, and even if you don't know what's coming up in the Gemara next, when the Gemara says that's obvious, if you think about it for just a moment, it's not so obvious. It's not so obvious.
Is there time limit on this?
What do you mean? Is there a statute of limitations on a lien?
10 years after how long?
Once you have a lien, a lien. When does a lien just dissolve?
That's what I'm asking. Is
20 years? Table that discussion. You can, after the daf, you can talk about what the statutes are in America. Okay. Okay. You again discuss it after. So the in halacha, I don't know. I don't recall a Gemara that talks about a statute of limitation in terms of a lien. Okay, anyway, so the Gemara says it's obvious. Now, if you're thinking it's not so obvious, so you'll be happy to know that there's more coming up in the Gemara. Now, Igadamri Adaraba. After the Gemara says, the reason why it's so interesting to me is because the Gemara says it's obvious, and now the Gemara is going to turn around and make an argument and say it's not so obvious. Usually the Gemara doesn't say pshita when it's not pshita. Anyway, so adrabah le'idachi. So the Gemara says, well, let's consider the following. So one brother will say to the brother, are you kidding me? I anticipated this, and that's why I specifically took the cash, because I didn't want to be encumbered with properties that have a lien on them, and I knew that there were creditors out there. And so look, you wanted the property, you wanted to assume the risk. I'm happy for you, but you assume the risk. I took the cash because I wanted to be free and clear of any creditors. So the Gemara says, that's exactly why I took the money. And so that in the event that there's a collection, they're not going to come after me. And you took the property, that's good for you. You're not going to be taking any of the cash from me. So the Gemara says, under these circumstances, I don't think cash and property are equivalent with one another. So if that's true, meaning if we're working now with the second argument, so the Gemara now says we have to go back to Rav Asi. Rav Asi says that cash and property are the same. So the Gemara says, okay, two brothers divided, and here what they divided is actual property, and along comes the Balchov and exercises his lien on the property and takes one of the two properties. And he takes only properties of one of the brothers. Okay. Just as it's a worthwhile discussion, an important discussion, in terms of when the creditor is exercising his lien, how can he arbitrarily go to one of the brothers? Meaning he has a lien on the estate, would seem reasonable to say that if that he should go after both brothers and take from both. Can't he just simply make some sort of arbitrary decision of which land
maybe
he wants to go to?
Adjoining land, he wants
specific
to his land, like to
so the if you take a look at Tosus over here, Tosus deals with this very issue. Tosus Zivra Maska Vitar Khelko Shachad Mehem, Vim Tomar Vakal Echa Khaiv Lefro Chova Vihem, Ven Yochalito Khelika Echad Kidiktani Beparishation Ochlin. So once again, these are Baba Basra halachas, but the Gemara Baba Basra says that each brother has a shared responsibility of paying back the loans of their father. So Yatzalem Sharchov Bechor Nosin Lapishna Vishlamar Demari Hacha Shasu Apotiki. So Tosus over here says that perhaps the case in question over here is talking about where the lien was made against a particular land, specific land. Generally speaking, here in our country, whenever you're borrowing from the bank and the bank puts a lien, so basically the way it operates here is that the bank assigns which property it is that they're coming to collect from. In fact, the mortgage is placed against the specific house, and usually speaking, it's the house that you're currently living in. Meaning, so the we're so used to a apotiki, like it's like from the Gemara standpoint, it's like, oh, maybe, or Tosus in this case, well, maybe there's an apotiki, meaning a specific lien against a specific property. Okay, either way, comes out now that the. What's the case? Case is that you have two brothers, they divide the lands, in comes a creditor, comes and takes one of their properties. Now, so the Gemara says, now, what Rav Asi is saying now is under these circumstances, they're going to have to redivide and redistribute. So the Gemara says, well, wait one second. The Gemara says, Rav Asi made this point once before, which is, ha'achim, the brothers, shechalku u'baba chov v'nato chalko she'achad mehem, exactly our scenario. Rav Amar batlua machlokes. So Rav is of the opinion that in terms of the original division of the estate, that's negated. We start all over again, and we redistribute whatever remaining properties are. Shmuel Amar Viter. Shmuel says no. Tough loss to the one who was seized against. Ravasi Amar Noto Revia Bakarka Revia Bamos. And Ravasi is of the opinion that what we're going to do over here is that we're going to make some sort of compromise. A quarter property, quarter money. What does that mean? So the Gemara is going to explain all three shitas. Rav Amar Balu Machlokas Kasavar Achim Shechaku Kiyorshim Hayu. According to Rav, the way that we view the brothers is that they're inheriting the property. Being that they're inheriting the property, all properties are really viewed as one global estate. So if one of the estates is taken by a creditor, so that obviously is deducted from the entire estate, and we're going to have to just simply do a redistribution of the remaining estate. Shmuel Amar Vita Kasavar Achim Shechaku Lekuchos Ukalokech Shulabach Reizdami. The Shmuel says that when brothers come and divide an estate, they're not considered as Yorshim, they're now considered as Lekuchos. They're like they're buying, it's a bartering one property for another. And not only is it buying, but it's buying with no recourse. So in other words, whatever property I end with is mine, whatever property you end up with yours, and we sold them to one another, we bartered them with one another, with no recourse whatsoever, properties are taken away from you, I'm sorry.
Does the Shmuel say that maybe even the brothers like divided land and money, the brother got land, maybe got more than his share of land he should have gotten, but the understanding that there would be a potential.
No. Let's assume it's an equitable distribution, and it just happens to be that.
So there was.
It's viewed. No, it's just viewed as a barter with no recourse. And Rav Asi Amar Nota Raviya Bakarka Raviya B'Maus Misaf Kalei Ikiyoshin Dami Gemachlok Ikalukuchos Dami. And Rav Asi says, I'm in the middle of exactly this debate, meaning I don't know whether or not the brothers are viewed as Yorshim or they're viewed as Lukuchos, and so therefore I'm going to take a compromise position. Hilkach Nota Raviya Bakarka Raviya B'Maus, and so therefore a quarter of it is compensated in land, a quarter of it is compensated in money. But in other words, I do not know. I simply do not know how to view the allocation of an estate.
Why wouldn't the lender go after the money? Why wouldn't go after tax?
Because the lender doesn't have a lien against the money. The lender only has a lien against property. There's no lien against money.
But isn't cash preferred?
No. There's no. They're not encumbered to the loan. The only thing encumbered to the loan is property. So Ella Mai Harin Kakarkalinyan. So again, we're just trying to figure out what Rav Asi is saying. So the Gemara says, Allah harenka karkalinyan meitav. So the Gemara says, well, what Rav Asi is saying is that when you damage, so money is a fair way of remuneration, just like property. Which the Gemara says, if that's true, hachana de Ravuna. So now, really what just happened is Rav Asi repeated what Ravuna said, and what's Rav Asi doing? So the Gemara says, v'chein, Ema v'chein amar Rav Asi. The Gemara says, okay, correction. Rav Asi, open up, whenever you say Rav Asi's halacha, say v'chein, which means, correct. Rav Asi is repeating that which Rav Huna has taught us. Viter. Amar v'chein amar Rav Huna b'mitzvah achtes. The Gemara makes a statement again in the name of Rav Huna, and that is that when it comes to a mitzvah, you go up to a third. What does that mean? My shlish, the Gemara says, what exactly does that mean? Elamar shlish beso. Does that mean that, look, you want to do a mitzvah and it happens to be an expensive mitzvah? So basically, you take your entire portfolio, you take your entire estate, and you pay up to a third of it for a mitzvah. So the Gemara says, Ela mi'ata, yisram le'tilsa mitzvasa, le'tsav le'kula besa. So the Gemara says, really? Now, does that mean that when you now come upon three mitzvos, and they're expensive mitzvos, so does that mean that now that you're supposed to spend your entire net worth in order to fulfill three mitzvos in the Torah? And the Gemara is asking it so incredulously, it is clear from the Gemara that that's not what the Torah demands of us. The Torah does not want us to be spending all of our money on mitzvahs and to be left homeless and assetless just to be able to perform three mitzvahs. So the Gemara patently rejects that suggestion, but obviously Rav Huna meant something. So the Gemara says, "Ela Amar Rabbi Zera b'hidr mitzvah ashlish b'mitzvah." So the Gemara says that, look, you want to perform a mitzvah, but you want to do it really nice, and so therefore you want to bump it up a little bit in order to not only just do the basic mitzvah, but to do a hidr mitzvah, to do a little bit nicer. The easiest example, the best example, would be the purchase of an esrog. So therefore, when you purchase an esrog, so obviously you can buy a base esrog and you can buy something a little bit more beautiful. How much more is it expected that you're supposed to pay in order to fulfill the mitzvah of not only mitzvah but hider mitzvah? So the Gemara says achlish. So the Gemara says, so you go up to a third. Now, whenever we discuss fractions in the Gemara, so there's always a point of confusion, because the Gemara says that fractions could be understood either internally or externally. What do I mean by that? Well, we know it's a third, but is it a third after you've added the amount, or is it a third before you've added the amount? And if just in terms of a cheat, it's a great cheat just to remember how to understand internal versus external. Take the fraction, take one number away from the denominator, and that's the difference between internal versus external. Meaning, let's say the esrog was $100. The base esrog is $100. I know, it's a little bit less than that. So actually, well, what's it called? It's a lot less than that. But anyway, but let's say a base esrog is $100. I'm just using 100 because it's easy. So now, if it's a third and it's an internal third, so that means that you're going to add 33%. 33% of 100 is 33. So in other words, so if you want to fulfill the mitzvah of hidr mitzvah, you'll be spending 133. On the other hand, if it's external, so that means that what you're going to do is you're going to add half, meaning you see that number third, so just knock off one off the denominator, so now it's a half, so it's now 50, so now you're going to be spending 150. How can you call 150 a third? Because now if you have 150, you take a third off 150, that's 50. Okay, that's the difference between internal versus external. And so the Gemara now wants to know, bihi der mitzvah, ad shlish me mitzvah, by Ravashi, shlish me legavu, shlish me labar. So the Gemara says, okay, so now I know that I should be spending another third. Is it an internal or an external take? Of the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Just in terms of simple lumdus, I don't know if it's simple, but in terms of simple lumdus, you're going to hear a shir, whenever you hear a shir on hiddur mitzvah, you're going to, generally speaking, what you're going to hear is hiddur mitzvah part and parcel of the mitzvah, or is it something external? Is it separate? Is it a separate mitzvah of the Torah that I should try to beautify? Essentially, that general chakira that we talk about hiddur mitzvah fits in beautifully with our Gemara, because our Gemara is asking, when we say that we're tacking on a third, is that an internal third? Is that an external third? Basically fits in with the general analysis of how hiddur mitzvah works. Well, just wait 1 second. Your question is about to be answered. By my Rava Amar Mishmei the Rebbe Zera Ashlish Mishalom Mikan VeElich Mishal Hakadosh Baruch Hu. And then the Gemara finishes off the discussion by saying that when it comes to a Heder Mitzvah, up until a third, that's on your account. After that point in time, it's up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. What exactly does that mean? So take a look at Rashi. Hainu Oso Shlish Yosef BeHeder Mitzvah Mishalohu Sheino Nifra Lo BeChayav Kedar Mina Yom LaSosam VeLo Hayom Litos Chara. So the way Rashi understands the Gemara over here means like this. You want to spend as much money as you want on a mitzvah, good for you. That's great. Again, obviously, prudence, common sense, the easy things in life. They're not so easy. So, but anyway, but you want to spend up to a third, that's fine. Up to a third, that all goes on Akash Baruch Hu's books. Meaning that you're not going to get any restitution in this world. In other words, in the world to come, the way Akash Baruch Hu keeps his books, as if I was his accountant, the way he keeps his books is up to a third, so you're going to get credit for doing the basic mitzvah, and you're going to be credited for the hiddur mitzvah. After a third, says the Gemara, the way Rashi understands it, mikan ve'elach, mashi yoseh behidu yoseh oshlish, yiparlo Akash Baruch Chayav. So Akash Baruch Hu is not only going to reward you, but reimburse you in this world. So that means that basically, if you go anything above a third, so now Akash Baruch Hu puts that at, credits you, but not only credits you for Olam Haba, but also credits you in this world as well. Okay. Although I'm not sure if what I just said is absolutely accurate. Meaning, it could be, again, I'm just sharing with you some of my doubt and my understanding of the Gemara. It could be that above a third, it's all going to be reimbursed in this world, and it's not going to be applied towards Olam Haba. But that I'm not sure about. But anyway, but that's the Gemara says that up to a third, that's all Olam Haba Schar. After a third, there's Olam Hazeh Schar as well. Yeah. That's the way Rashi understands the Gemara.
It doesn't mean if you sell a soy for one price,
no, you're right. In other words, your hiddur mitzvah is to go out and.